This is the Aftermarket Radio Network. Carm Capriotto here, the pioneer of automotive aftermarket podcasts, with a father-daughter episode that you are going to love. Boomers and millennials could not be more different if they tried. Now, we've all heard the stereotype for both generations, and miscommunication and frustration often bubbles to the surface in any work environment. Now, instead of criticizing different generations than our own, isn't it time we pause and started understanding each other? In this episode, Bill Haas is the boomer and Sarah Fraser is the millennial. They are also a father and daughter team that works together. Listen to both perspectives and find out how both generations can actually work together harmoniously. Thanks to our partners Apex and Shopware for bringing you this episode. Hey, did you hear that Apex 2021 has a new area designated just for you at Repair Shop HQ? They've got you in mind. Now, it's a one-stop destination and being designed to meet the product, equipment, and training needs of shop owners, managers, and technicians. It's all happening at Apex 2021, November 2nd through the 4th. In Las Vegas. Now, I'll be there in Repair Shop HQ with my studio. Hope to see you there. Register now at aapexshow.com. Hey, when was the last time you ordered something online? Say a burger from Grubhub? Maybe your groceries from Amazon? How about things that are really high-tech, like auto repair? Shopware's online interactive repair orders lets you do just that. Shopware, check it out for yourself on the web at getshopware.com. Hey, do you have a topic you'd love to discuss on the podcast? Well, I'd love to hear from you. So many of the podcasts come from you and your ideas and your stories. Email me, carm@remarkableresults.biz, and let me know what's on your mind. Hey, everybody, a warm welcome to two great friends, Bill Haas from Haas Performance Consulting. Hello, William.
Good afternoon, morning, whatever it is, wherever we are. I'm not sure, but hello.
Well, we're already starting out. I love it. And his daughter, Sarah Fraser from Haas Performance Consulting. Hello, Sarah.
Hey.
Thank you all so much for all the great things you've done on the podcast for us. Great, intelligent stuff, Sarah. We're going to talk about millennials today. You kind of were my millennial go-to a while back. Your dad started it off, and then you came on, and then you filled in the blank, and because you put your hand up and said, why the heck is he teaching about millennials? He's a boomer. Shouldn't I be doing that? And so, of course, you've been all over the country. You're on all kinds of webinars. I've seen you at so many places doing this. How do I have to manage and lead millennials in my business? And I think, Bill, you got juiced up a long time ago, realizing that the age of many of the shop owners.
Well, you know, it's a funny story, and I don't know if you've ever heard that story, actually. But I was actually going and doing seminars on marketing to Generation X and Y. That was actually the title of the seminar, Marketing to Generation X and Y. And like anything, you get done with the seminar, and a couple people come up to talk to you at the end of the seminar, and all of a sudden, somebody says, your seminar was great, but I wish you would teach us how to work with them. And the light bulb went on. I went, wait a minute. That apparently is a problem.
You know, I get so many of the ideas for my shows from the people in the industry. And what you just said is, you got to be out there. You got to be listening to your people. You got to be breaking bread, having a beer with somebody. And you got to pay attention. I think what happens, and you're a person where you hear, you see, you feel, and you go, oh my God, I just learned something, or this is another great moment for coaching, or I have a client that's suffering with that, and I didn't know how to get to him. Someone out here told me how to get to him.
But you know, to your point, Carm, I mean, honestly, why would people want to listen to an old guy talk about millennials or Generation Z? I mean, I'm talking about my kids. I'm talking about my grandkids. They should hear from people that live it, that know it, that understand it because it is their life. There's a big disconnect for me.
We're here to update some of our other millennial episodes to freshen it. The reason that I like to turn on the same topic, say, we did 3 years ago, is because those 3 year ago podcasts are down the stack, Bill. You know, they're way down there, even though you could go and type in millennial on my website and find them all. Refreshing this is really cool. So let's start this out by, let me give you a little quote here from a CNBC article. Interest in learning and development, and this is what I think is so fascinating, is particularly strong among younger workers, the millennials. LinkedIn did some research and found that roughly a quarter of Gen Z and millennials say learning is the number one thing that makes them happy at work. And over a quarter, 27% now, of Gen Zs say the number one reason they leave their job is because they did not have the opportunity to learn and grow. And so I bring that up for one reason and one reason only. Service advisor training, technician training, and the training commitment and culture in the business, there's the proof. They don't have time. No, they want to learn. Right, Sarah?
Absolutely. I have had so many opportunities to learn at different jobs, and I've had jobs where I didn't have those opportunities or I wasn't being challenged. And I don't want to just go to work and do the same thing over and over again. I want to learn. I want to grow. I want to advance. I want to know that there's some type of future that I can work towards, and I'm not going to be stuck in that same position all the time. So I've done a lot of online training from different jobs, and I've really enjoyed that opportunity to be able to do those things.
Bill, a boomer's perspective about job expectations would be what?
Well, I think for a lot of boomers, it was really just show up, shut up, and get to work, you know?
Exactly.
Right? Why aren't you here on time? You got to show up. So why aren't you here on time? Don't give me any excuses. This is when we start. You better be here when we start.
But there was a really long line at Starbucks today.
What do I care? I don't even like... I got a 30-cup pot over here full of coffee. What are you wasting time at Starbucks for?
And you know what? At the end of the day, we throw it out on the driveway and we use it for blacktop seal.
Exactly.
You know? So, you know, that's it for me. But that's the world I came from, right? I mean, that's what I learned when I went to work was, if you're going to do anything, be on time. When you get to work, you're there to work. You're not there to talk. You're there to work. So show up, shut up, and get to work. That's what I was. That's what it was for me. If I was talking, I wasn't working.
That's so different. Like for me and in my job experiences, you show up, you have a cup of coffee, you chit chat about the weekend or the night before, like. But I'm still working while I'm doing those things. I worked as an office manager for a very long time, and I was able to come in and drink my coffee and chat with my salespeople and talk about our day. But just because I'm talking doesn't mean I'm not working. I'm on my computer. I'm doing five different things at once.
But it doesn't look like you're working.
So there's a perception. Sarah, as the millennial, feels she is kind of getting routined up, if you will, doing all these multitasking things. And Bill, you see her jabbering over in the corner about the movie she just streamed the other night. And to you, that's not work.
You know, but this is a struggle for us as millennials. And this is really what we have to get past as employers is this. Quit judging what they're doing and judge what they've done. What are they producing? Are they meeting your expectations? Are they meeting timelines? Are they getting work product done? So whether they're technicians in the shop working on cars, whether they're advisors up front that need to answer the phone, write estimates, sell work, it doesn't matter. Don't judge them based on what you happen to see today in terms of they were late, they walked in with the Starbucks cup in their hand, and now you know why they're late. They don't have to tell you why they're late. You know why they're late, okay? And we judge them on all that stuff instead of going, what did we accomplish today? Did you meet our goals here? If we create the expectations, and that's what we really have to do is create the expectations. You know, I love the cell phone thing, right? Because, you know, I was telling you about, you know, doing the class for the millennials, right? Well, if you go back a few years, everybody hated the cell phone. Bosses, employers hated the cell phone, right? I mean, they would do anything to figure out, make them leave it in the car, put it in a locker, you know. I mean, so there were people that would actually have little lock boxes that all the employees would put their cell phones in and then get them out at lunchtime so that, oh my gosh, I can't have them on their cell phone. And so I used to tell people all the time in class, I said, I don't see the cell phone as a problem. I see you as the problem. Because if they have time to be on their cell phone doing whatever they're doing on the cell phone, that means you didn't give them enough work to do. So if you want to fix the problem, realize what the real problem is and make sure they have enough things to do that they're not going to get bored. Say, are people ever get bored at work?
Absolutely. Of course. All the time.
Well, what are you going to do if you get bored? You're going to do stuff you enjoy. You're going to talk to people you're friends with, right?
Another perspective on that, like I could never work somewhere if they wouldn't let me have my phone on me. And it's not because I need to check Facebook or I need to do something when I'm bored. That's my lifeline to my friends and my family. And no matter how much I love my job, my family comes first. And if somebody got in an accident or so, you know, like that's how I'm going to be alerted of that something's going on and I need to leave work and go take care of something. And it's happened before. My best friend's mom was sick. You know, things happen that are more important than my job, unfortunately. And that taking that away from me and not being able to have access to those things that are so important to me would not work for me.
There's differing priorities, guys, that boomers and even some Gen Xers have to accept for the millennial generation. We watch commercials, watch a half hour TV tonight, and this is what you're going to see. You're going to see the millennial generation, and you're going to see they never settle down. They're drowning in debt because they have to improve their score, right? That they actually can't find a job because they have a useless degree they're in debt over, that they refuse to put their phone away, right, Sarah? And they're addicted to lattes, right, Sarah? So we see that all the time. You walk away from that, and it solidifies the manager or the leader of a millennial group as to why they feel like they do. He says, yeah, well, they're addicted to lattes. Ugh. Why would they spend $8 on a coffee every morning and every afternoon? Why are they spending this kind of money? When I was young, we saved. We didn't go out.
I must pay them too much. If they can afford an $8 latte three times a day, I must pay them too much money.
And then it goes to, are we giving them good work? Because they want good work. They want to be part of a place with purpose. Right, Sarah? Are we talking, is our culture in our shops enough that people know what our values are and that those values extend to exceptional customer service and safety and reliability and trust? Do they even know that? Because to me, that's a belonging piece that millennials want.
I need to know that I'm helping people, that what I'm doing matters, that I'm making a difference. I need to know if I'm doing it well or not. And I need, like, you know, we talk about giving reviews. I almost need to be reviewed every day. I need somebody to check in with me and at least say, like, hey, you did really, really well in that. Or you could have done this a little bit different. Something. Just let me know. Because if you don't tell me how I'm doing, I automatically think I'm doing an awful job.
And now, then there's a big difference for me because nobody ever had to tell me I did a good job. Nobody. I knew if I did a good job. And I was the first one to know if I didn't do a good job. And I'd work my butt off to make sure nobody could find out I didn't do a good job. You know, so I think there's a huge difference between the boomers and the millennials. And I think that's a real struggle for the boomer who's the boss, manager, supervisor. We don't know how to give that feedback. We don't understand how important that feedback is. And that it needs to be so routine.
Constant. I you could have told me you did a great job yesterday, but 2 days later, if I haven't heard how I'm doing now, I'm like, oh, maybe I really messed up. Or, you know, like I've done podcasts with Karm before when they're released. If you don't call me and say like, hey, you did a really, you know, and you do, you always listen and you always call me. You're like, sorry, you did a great job on that podcast you did with Karm. But like if one was to be released and you didn't say a word to me, I'd be going like, wow. I really bombed it. It was awful. You know, we need that almost reassurance. But also with that appreciation, just even just like a thank you for coming to work today goes so far that I don't think boomers need that.
Boomers wouldn't even, that's not even in your vocabulary. Thank you for coming into work today. Am I right, Bill?
Yeah, I would have a hard time thanking somebody to come to work today because it's like if I hired you, you know, there's a job here for you. You just need to show up, right? Am I going to thank you for that? I mean, to me, this is kind of given. But I will tell you this. I mean, I can go back to, you know, the very first time that I owned a business, at the end of the day, I thanked every employee for being there that day. I thought that was important. I thought it was important for people to know that I recognized that they were there and that they spent the entire day with us and they did what was necessary to take care of customers. So you're right. I'm not going to thank somebody for showing up, but after you've been there, I'll thank you for what you did that day.
Thank you for that, because I just got this wild lesson in my head. What can we do to our listener to teach them how to be more thankful? So let's see. We reached numbers today that we hadn't reached in a couple of weeks, okay? And we say, hey, thanks. It was one of the best days we've ever had. Hey, thanks. As hot as it was out there, we all pulled through. Hey, thanks to Sally for bringing in the cookies in the afternoon. Hey, thank you all for... I mean, if you look around you, you could find things to be thankful for. So it doesn't have to be manufactured. It doesn't have to be robotic that before anyone leaves, I have to thank them. But find, even if it's a general thank you to the team, there's tons of things all around you to be thankful for.
Absolutely.
And be genuine about it too. Like, don't say thank you just to say thank you. Like, we're choosing your business to come and spend how much of our time at. And if I'm, showing up and doing what I'm supposed to and doing a good job, I want to be appreciated for that.
How many times, Bill, have you ever said, get out of the way? You don't know how to do this. I'll do it myself.
Oh, all the time. Here was my problem, right? I probably knew how to do everything that had to be done in the business. I had more experience at it. I was more knowledgeable. And so if I saw somebody struggling, get out of the way. I'll do it. Let me take over. Absolutely. Step right in. Did they learn anything from that? Absolutely not.
To me is one of the worst things you could do to me as an employee, is to step in and do my job for me, especially if it's in front of a customer, because now I'm like, I feel like I can't do my job. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm now embarrassed in front of this customer. And I'm completely like, why am I even here? If you have the time to come in and do my job for me, why did you even bring me in today? Like, I'm obviously not needed. Like, that crushes me more than, like, that would ruin my whole day. And then I'm no longer a functioning great employee. If I'm feeling this in my head and I'm feeling like I don't know what I'm doing and I don't belong here, now what am I contributing to the team? How am I making a difference? How am I making something better today? And that's the worst thing you can do to me, is take that away. Take that, like, you're helping, you're making a difference away.
Yeah, I think, sometimes we do that type of stuff and we drive people away from our stores. We thought we were doing the right stuff. We were hiring people and finding people to add talent to the team and be able to get better service, and then we kill it. We just absolutely kill it, shoot ourselves in the foot, just like, but I hear that so much from people, that, and I don't know that this is a generational thing, probably is, but people are not good at delegating. Terrible delegators, right? It's like, hey, why don't you show Sarah how to do that? Well, why would I do that? I can do it faster myself than the time it's going to take to show Sarah how to do it. Well, what people don't recognize when they say that is, what I've really heard is, you're going to be doing it yourself forever because you're never going to show Sarah how to do it. So that means all the things that you want to do that you never get to do is because you can't delegate or won't delegate. So maybe it takes time to show Sarah how to do it, but once I show Sarah how to do it, I don't have to do it anymore. I now have the ability to do other stuff that I need to be doing that I can move on to, because I've now allowed someone to step into that role or to take over that responsibility. I think baby boomers are horrible with that. I don't think we're good with that at all. That's something that has to be learned.
What I hear you say, Bill, is individual versus team, Sarah. I mean, somebody that doesn't want to teach you, as you say, Bill, is going to... If we're paying people individually and not paying people as a team, or there's no team incentives, and we don't have the culture of team, then there will always be that lonely person on top of the hill. And frankly, if you as an owner have a high culture business, you can spot the individual person out there all day long. And if you're a boomer and you're like that, you've got to understand how millennials want to be part of a team.
Yes, we do. We are huge team players. Like, we want to be able to step in and help. If somebody's going on vacation and, you know, somebody's going to need to pick up that part of their load, I want to be able to step in and help. And at the same time, I want that for me. If I'm the office manager and I'm the only person who does my job, but I need to go away for a week, someone else needs to know how to do it. And when I worked in a shop, our finance manager and I cross-trained to where, like, the important stuff, we knew how to do each other's job, which was amazing, because if we got really busy and she had three applications come in, I could take one and I could do it for her. And we worked really, really well as a team. And if she had to leave to take care of her kid, I could step in and help. If I had to leave for something, she could step in and do the important things that I needed done. And as a millennial, that team atmosphere, we love that. We love building each other up and working together. And I didn't ever see it as a competition, which I don't know if that's maybe a generational thing, thinking if I train you how to do my job, now you're going to take my job. And I never felt that way about it.
Oh, that's generational. Yeah. I think there's a lot of that. The competitive side of, why would I teach them how to do my job? They could then do my job and maybe I'm out of a job.
Hey, Carm here. And coming up, Bill shares a story about a frustrated owner trying to replace his service advisor without ever discussing with that employee their shortcomings. Keep listening to find out what happened. Hey, with registration now open for Apex 2021 in Las Vegas, you can already feel the excitement building for this year's homecoming. Hey, I can't wait to reconnect with all of you in person and share stories of our time apart, both personal and professional. And I also can't wait to sit in on the technical and business management training specifically for you, the service professional. Now, with more than 20 sessions that are planned, you'll hear from the best of the best, including Francisco Moreno, who will lead a session on electronification of the chassis, and Malin Newton, who will share the positive transformation that happens in the shop when excellence is a habit. Make sure to also experience the new Repair Shop HQ and Joe's Garage. It's designed with you in mind. And get on the show floor to see the many new products and emerging technologies. The dates again, November 2nd through the 4th, 2021. Be there. Register right now at aapexshow.com. The automotive industry is blazing through with so many twists and turns and changes. Careful not to crash. Yet amidst it all, the demand for repair is a constant. So the questions remain, will repair shops adapt or die? Well, our friends at Shopware Shop Management Software get it. Their CEO is a shop owner. They understand what it takes to repair cars, and they're ready for the next big thing in automotive. Shopware tailors mainstream web-based technology to the needs of the industry's leading repair shops. You can run entirely digital, phone optional, and paper-free. Interactive online repair orders will not only meet the needs of contemporary drivers, but they are blown away by the experience. Connecting the aftermarket together, Shopware's ecosystem enables next-generation shop efficiency and customer satisfaction without compromise. Full-service onboarding and best-in-class support provide everything a shop needs to transform its business and stay competitive long into the future. Enjoy more accurate quotes, more profitable jobs, busier technicians, and of course, happier customers. On the web at getshopware.com. I have found something so interesting of late, talking to so many younger shop owners. I'm so happy. So many millennial shop owners that are out there that have bit off a big bullet. And they're getting help. And I've gotten to know so many of them. I find out, Bill, Sarah, that their workforce is millennials along with them. And occasionally there's a 45 or a 55-year-old legacy person in the business, or somebody they've known for years, or they bought a place and they kept a legacy person around. But they're hiring people in their own effigy. So this podcast doesn't mean anything to a millennial shop owner who has millennial workers, because they know how to take care of them.
Yep.
It comes natural to them.
Yes. Culture isn't free food to them. The ROI on the business isn't about getting me a new F-250.
Carm, you started out with the thing from the news article that you read about the training thing, right? Well, how many years did we hear or did we even say, well, we're not going to send people to training? What if they get trained and leave? What if they go work for one of our competitors? What if they go work, you know, and then a really smart guy, I don't know who this guy was, doesn't matter, but some really smart guy somewhere said, well, what if you don't train them and they stay? It's like, whoa, there's a revelation. What if we don't train them and they stay? Now who do we have working for us, right? But I think that training thing is really important. I think for a lot of us, we took it sort of as an individual kind of a thing. I don't think it came from the top down necessarily. That's a problem.
To add on to that quote, you know, what if I don't train them and they stay? Talking to so many people in the industry and saying, well, I'm not going to let my guy go to a local class because another technician from another shop or shop owner is going to be there and they're going to recruit my people. And the very confident, successful shop owners say, go. And here's the reason. Because they treat them well enough that they'll want to stay.
Yeah, I mean, to me, that would be a form of flattery that someone would be interested in taking the technician from your store to their store. But I think the, you know, even greater thing would be when the employee says, you know, I'm not interested. There's no way you can do for me what Bill does for me or what Sarah does for me or what Carm does for me. I have no interest in leaving whatsoever. You know, and here, you know, we're seeing that today. That's actually playing out probably better today than it ever has. I mean, you know, not that many years ago, people would leave jobs for a little bit of money. If I could get a little bit more money, I'd leave jobs because essentially jobs were the same. You're not seeing that anymore today. Today, for someone to leave their job, they really need to be unhappy where they're at, or it takes a substantial amount of money to make that difference.
I think the culture in a workplace is huge. If I'm comfortable with the people I work with and I'm happy and I have a good relationship with my boss and I'm taken care of, that, you know, that dollar more an hour, yeah, I might be getting a bigger paycheck, but if I'm miserable at work, that's not worth it to me. I want to be happy at work.
And you make a good point because, you know what? The money is a very short-term fix, right? When we have unhappy employees and we decide to give them some more money, they're happy for a little while, but that really doesn't fix the real problem. If they're unhappy with, you know, if they wake up in the morning and dread getting out of bed to go to work, a little bit of money doesn't fix that. Nope. That's what really has to be fixed. How do you put them in a place where they jump out of bed to go to work? Because those are the people I want to be with. That's where I want to spend my day. That's the kind of stuff I want to do that I enjoy and I love and I... Where's that excitement? That's the excitement, right? I mean, I know what that was like for me as a technician. I mean, I can go back to very early in my career. That excitement for me was the car that nobody else could fix that finally came to me, and I'm going to be the guy to fix it. That was my excitement.
So Sarah sits down with Bill in a job interview, and she says, hey, I want some flexible hours, and I want to make enough money so I never have to work overtime. And Bill falls off his chair because he's a boomer. He doesn't get that.
It took me a while, honestly, to adjust to some of what Sarah does and how she does it. Okay?
Are you sure you're fully adjusted?
Well, I'm not full. I'm probably not fully adjusted. I mean,
I don't know where I got to have my daughter Tracy on here. This would have been great. Two fathers, you know, two daughters. Because I'm not sure, Tracy. We got to talk. She's editing this, so she's going to hear this eventually.
She'll get it right. Right. You know, Sarah doesn't have set hours. Sarah doesn't have a set schedule. And believe me, there's times that I've had to bite my tongue, like for a boomer.
You're at the grind every minute of the day.
Yeah, because that's all we equate to is hard work is long hours. Think about that. Hard work is long hours. I can't get the concept that I can work hard for a short period of time and get everything done that needs to be done I don't get it. That's way beyond me.
You got to work smarter, not harder. If I put in a 20-hour day, but I just didn't get done what I wanted to be done, that wouldn't feel like hard work to me. But if I checked everything off my list and got it done in 5 hours, that was hard work. Like, I got everything done. Like, hours don't, like, and I struggled with that when I worked at a desk job because I had to be there from this time to this time. But sometimes my work was done by 2 o'clock in the afternoon and I'm like, why am I still here? Like, I've got everything done that needs to be done. I'd rather be going out to lunch with my friend or spending time with my husband who was working nights at that time. Like, there were just things that were more important than sitting there if everything that was done and I didn't have to be there anymore.
That is the second time I've heard her say, make a reference to things. There are things that are more important than my job.
Yeah.
In the short time we've been here, that's the second reference that she's made to that. And for me, nothing's ever been more important than my work. Now, I know on the surface that really sounds horrible, right? I mean, yes, there's a lot of things that are very important to me, right? But man, I tell you what, I would put work at such a level of importance that there were a lot of things that I missed that I should have been a part of.
Oh boy, now you're hitting home. There isn't a boomer that doesn't have a stain or a stake in their heart for not being there. I'm the first to admit it. I've told my wife and my kids. Yeah, I traveled like you did. I mean, there were 15 years of 3-4 days a week never being home. You know, thank God for Ann. For being
people
here,
people say, "Well, you know, you're the boss. You're self-employed, and you know." And I'm like, "Yeah, that's great. I have a lot of flexibility." It's like, well, what I did and what I could have done were entirely different things.
So, listening to both of you talk, I had this, and it always happens to me. I always have these pow revelations and ideas that happen, and I heard what you said. Remember what Bill said about 4 or 5 minutes ago. Bill, is Sarah ready? You don't have to answer this if you don't want. Is Sarah ready to take over the business in the mental framework and the efforts that need to go in it to sustain the business so she can pay you a fee to sit in the Barca lounger? Because to me, what I heard you say is, I don't know where she is. She sets her own hours. She sets her own times. I'm always at the grind. How could Sarah come in and not be at the grind like me and run a successful business?
So the answer to the question is, yes, she is. But she's going to do it on her terms. Now, to her credit, the only one that judges, where is she? She didn't answer the phone. I wonder what she's doing. That's me. To her credit, not one client has ever said, Sarah's unresponsive. I can't reach Sarah. You know, never, ever. Sarah takes care of the guest, the client, the customer, whatever you want to label them. It doesn't matter. She does what needs to be done. Yeah, she could do it. Absolutely.
I just don't do it the way you would do it. I mean, we just do it differently.
The message, with all the succession talk that's going on in our industry, and it's not just talk, it's the reality of the position that we're in. Dads, moms that are out there that are looking at the children in the succession plan, use this episode. We're not talking succession here. We're talking boomers versus millennials and the different generations and the different traits that they have. You cannot expect, based on what Bill and Sarah are telling us, you cannot expect them to be like you. You got to give them their freedom.
Well, wait a minute, Carm. The best employee is going to be just like me. That's who I've.
No.
Yeah, you're right. For. You're right, Bill. From a boomer's perspective, you're right.
That's exactly what we do, right? If I need to hire somebody, I better find somebody just like me. I need to find somebody that is as smart as me, will work as hard as me. That's going to be my best employee.
I want to find somebody different than me. I want to find somebody with a different perspective who will challenge me and make me learn and teach me and help me grow. I already have me. I don't need somebody just like me. I can be complicated. I don't want to work with somebody who's complicated like me. I want somebody different, but I want that team. I want people that bring different things to the table. So I wouldn't want to hire somebody just like me.
You know what I'm waiting for, Carm? I'm waiting for the day that she does take over the company and I can work for her, okay? And see if she can find me.
Role reverse.
I don't think it would be that hard. I'm pretty sure you'll be in your office till 6 p.m. or 7 p.m. every night, like you are.
I came up with a new term, Bill-like.
Bill-like, yeah. You should be more Bill-like, yeah. I think you could find a lot of arguments for that.
And what about shortcomings, Bill? Sometimes we are so quick, you know, to say, I don't know, they just don't get it. They said they could do this and now they can't. We're so quick to judge as a boomer.
Yeah, we are. And it's, you know, the way we go about it's probably not good at all. Because we'll complain to everybody about this employee's shortcomings, right? I mean, we'll complain to the other people that work there. We'll complain to the tool guy. We'll complain to the part salesman. We'll complain to our spouse, significant other. We work with a coach. We'll complain to the coach about all the problems I have with this employee. We'll complain to everybody except the one person that can do anything about it. We'll fail to go have a conversation with that person and talk about what we see as a problem and what we need to do to correct it. We'll avoid that conversation, but we'll talk to everybody else. And then,
why are you so afraid of having that conversation with me, like with an employee? What is the fear around that?
Show up, shut up, and go to work.
Why should I have to have that conversation? Just come and do your job.
You're having it with everyone else, though. So you're already wasting all this time having that conversation with all these other people.
Oh, but it just feels better when you're able to talk about it. It's therapeutic.
So talk to that employee about it, because they're the one that needs to. I would much rather have a boss come to me and say, we're going to sit down and talk about something. And here's some things that we need to work on, than to overhear it from my coworker that somebody was complaining about me, or to just have you, as you know, have me think everything's going fine when you're really not happy. Like, of having like a sit down chat with a superior. And I don't have that. Like, oh, the boss wants to talk to you. I think that used to be maybe kind of a scary thing. Like, that's never been a scary thing to me. Like, oh, okay, let's have a conversation. What's up? Like, it could be good, it could be bad, but I'm going to learn something by the end of it. And hopefully I'll get to say my piece too, because maybe they're doing something that's driving me crazy. And if we could talk about it and we're both doing things that are fighting each other and not communicating.
Right.
I mean, and then you complain to everyone else. Like, what is that doing to your business culture? Because your other employees don't want to hear that you're unhappy with that employee. Nobody wants, you know, that's...
Well, not only that, but don't the other employees wonder what you're saying about them to someone else?
Yeah.
Sure.
And so here's the whole thing. If you're complaining, doesn't a millennial, Sarah, want a strong leader to guide them through? Thank you, letting me know. How are things? You want constant reviews. And if the boomer realizes that if they have a problem and they go to everyone else but that person, the boomer wants to hear from you, good or bad. The you know, if they're going to leave in 6 months, let them leave in two, because you can't get on the same page. But you have to make the effort as a boomer owner, leader, to do this. Right, Sarah?
100%. And as an employee, like, I don't feel that that's my responsibility to come to you and be like, hey, is everything okay? You know, you've been kind of short with me lately. Like, I don't feel like that's my responsibility. If you're having something, an issue with what I'm doing as the manager, as the boss, as the leader, you should be starting that conversation with me. You should be setting a time with me out of the, you know, away from customers, away from other employees. Let's sit down, let's talk. And I want to learn, right? So if I'm doing something wrong, I want you to take the time and take it into a teaching opportunity and teach me what it is and how I need to change what I'm doing. Or maybe I'm doing something because it works better for me, but you're not understanding why that works better for me. And so maybe if I can explain my side of it, well, X, Y, and Z, this is why this happens in this order. And now you can understand where I'm coming from. But I think just taking those moments of frustration and turning them into teaching moments rather than, you know, having this negative energy and all this complaining around is way better.
I'll share a quick story with you, right? So there's a shop owner that has a service advisor, and he's very unhappy with the service advisor. So he's been frustrated for a long time, and the things he's attempted to do haven't made any difference. The talks haven't made any difference. Just so now he gives up. Now he's going to find a replacement for his service advisor. So he puts an ad out for a service advisor. But he thinks he's put a blind ad out. People don't know where they're applying to. They don't have a business name. They don't have a phone number. They just have a place to send a resume. Unfortunately, he was incorrect, and it wasn't a blind ad. And the people saw in the ad the name of the business and the phone number. And so people that sent resumes hadn't heard back from him right away. So one day, the service advisor's gone to lunch, and as she's coming back from lunch, a young man is walking into the building with her with a manila folder in his hand and walks up to the service counter to the owner and says, I sent you my resume for that job that you posted for a service advisor, and I hadn't heard from you, so I wanted to drop a copy off to make sure you got that you received it. He's like, well, thank you very much. The position's not open anymore. I mean, now he's just trying to cover his tracks, right? And so the young man leaves. And the service advisor goes, is there a problem? Am I being replaced? And the owner goes, well, yeah, I was thinking about replacing you, but I didn't want you to hear about it this way. And then the conversation moved to, I had no idea that I wasn't meeting your expectations, or that I was, that finally opened the door for the conversation to actually take place. Guess what it's done to their relationship? Mm-hmm. Service advisor is still there, and they have a better relationship today because of what actually happened. It forced the real conversation to take place. He only thought he was having conversations with her before. Now the real conversation took place. Now she understood what she needed to do better or different to keep her job, because guess what? She liked her job, and she liked the people she worked with, and she didn't think there was any problem because it really had never been made clear to her that there was a problem. See, I think a lot of these conversations we have as boomers, we have with ourselves, and then we think that they actually happened.
I got to tell you, there's so much to learn there. To have a boomer have a mentality that I hired him to do this job. They're not. I cannot invest in any more time in this individual. And so I am preparing to move on. The lesson that the boomer got was this individual, just as Sarah has pointed out so nicely during this episode, just tell me, work with me, tell me what your expectations are, give me a purpose. I want to do for you what you want to do, yet I want to live my life the way I want to live it, but when I'm here, show me.
And I feel like had he replaced that person and brought in another person and maybe didn't put the time or the training or the learning into that person, you're ending up back in the same situation again. Like, that's, you're not getting anywhere. You can't just keep replacing people if the people aren't the problem.
Well, I don't know, guys. There were some great lessons here in this episode. Every time we get together, all this stuff happens. And is there any final things you want to cover that you didn't?
I had a couple of things on my notes of things that, just as a millennial, that I want from a job. So I'll just kind of touch on those a little bit. You know, I want a positive environment. I want to work for companies that are eco-friendly, that care about things that matter, that contribute to charitable things. We talked a little bit about, I want advancement. I want learning opportunities. I want to be working with relevant technology, right? I don't want to be working with stuff from 20 years ago. We've moved on. We've learned there's a lot of relevant technology out there. Those are the things I want to be using.
That's huge.
I want to be treated fairly and equally, no matter my gender, my race, my sexual orientation. None of that should matter. I want to be treated like everyone else in the business, and I want to be comfortable working there. I want to work somewhere that feels safe. And safe as in safe from bullying, safe from harassment. And that if something is happening, that my boss is going to stand up for me and say, hey, you can't talk to your coworker that way. Those kind of things aren't acceptable here. I want to come to work somewhere where I know I'm respected, I'm treated well, I'm appreciated, I'm making a difference, I'm comfortable, I'm safe, I want to feel good when I'm there. All of those things are things that are really important to me as a millennial when it comes to my job, more so than what my paycheck is.
When Sarah first started working for us, one of her very first questions was, Dad, what does the company contribute to? What does the company support? What are things that are important to the company that are part of what we do? Who do you give, who do you donate to? And I thought, I've never had an employee in my entire life ask me that, like that was important or that they cared. But I'll never forget that. That was one of the very first things that she asked about the company was, what do you do? What's important? What do you do in the company that you support?
It is important. And I worked at a used car dealership for a while. And every year around Christmas, we would take X amount of dollars from each car we sold and put it aside and give it to a charity. And our boss was really cool because we got to help decide on who that went to. Our whole team got to get together and we all got to bring up suggestions and talk about the different charities that we think could really benefit. And we got to be part of that decision making, which again, to a millennial is huge. Let me be part of the conversation. Let my voice be heard. Let my, even if you don't agree with my opinions, listen to them and let me know you heard me. Like that's huge for me. I will also never forget one of our biggest arguments since working together has been about Dad really, really felt the need that I needed to wear a button-down shirt with the logo on it when I was going out or teaching or doing something like this. And I said, absolutely not. I am not into uniforms. We want to be able to express ourselves. We want to be able to show our style and our attitude through the way we're dressed, the way we present ourselves. So to me, I've worked jobs with uniforms before. It's not my favorite thing. And when I had to, I would do really fun makeup, like really bright green and blue eyeshadow, just something to still have a bit of my personality show. So that was a thing that we definitely butted heads on, this opinion of what was appropriate dress or appropriate to wear. And especially if I'm standing in front of a group of people talking for 2 hours, I want to be comfortable and I want to be myself. And I do my best work when I feel good and I feel my best when I look good. So just as long as I'm not coming into work looking disheveled and not put together, let me, express myself through that. So that's kind of on the uniform point, I guess.
I remember recently doing an aftermarket weekly shop tour with a shop owner, beautiful place. And he said, my service people have a different uniform. It's a gray top, black bottom. And my people have a black top, gray bottom, and keeping with the company colors. But we differentiate between the front staff and the back staff. But uniforms were required because his brand was so important that he's built over the years. Would you say I'm not wearing?
It depends on if it's comfortable, I guess. If you're going to have a uniform, it needs to be comfortable. But to me, I'd rather wear a name tag or something with a logo on it that still stays in brand, or just you need to wear a black shirt. But let me pick the black shirt, a black shirt that fits me well, that I'm comfortable in, or you pick a black shirt and gray pants, because our bodies are not all the same. Things fit us differently. Like, let me at least find things that fit me correctly. When I worked at the dealership, they were very casual. A lot of the people who worked there wore jeans and polo shirts and were very casual. And I was always told, you can come in, you don't have to dress up. I dressed up all the time because that, for me, is how I feel good. Like, I feel good in a dress. I feel good with makeup on and my hair done. Like, but that's a personal thing for me. At least just give me the option to kind of have a little bit of myself.
Wow. I could go on. I have a million other things going on in my head about about that whole dress thing, but I'm not going to deal with it right now.
All I can add, Carm, is this. I have saved a lot of money on logo shirts.
Very good. Hey, guys, thanks for being here. This was not only interesting and profound, it was a lot of fun. It's always great to get together with you, Bill Haas and Sarah Frazier from Haas Performance Consulting. Thanks so much for nailing this one.
Thanks, Carm.
Thank you so much.
Thanks for being on board to listen and learn from the premier automotive aftermarket podcast. Until next time.